Welcome back, everyone. We are at the SSDP 2016 conference, and I've run into two giants of reform. We've got Eric Sterling from the SSDP Board of Directors. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Cannabis Radio. It is such a thrill to be here with Russ Belville. Hi, Cannabis Radio. This is Eric Sterling, and it is such a thrill to be here with Russ Belville covering this exciting conference of students.
That's right. And we got Chris Crane here as well. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Great to be here and back home with SSDP.
What do you think about the turnout here for this SSDP conference? Looks like the biggest ever.
It is the biggest ever. Yeah, I hear there's about 550 people, 350 students, kids from like 13 countries. It's amazing. This is one of the more inspiring events I think I've ever been to.
You may be the first SSDP alumni I ever met so many years ago. What keeps you busy now?
Today I'm working with Forefront Ventures, my company, and we work with dispensary applicants and operators around the country, and then a few other ventures in the medical cannabis industry.
Fantastic. Now, Eric, you've got a ton of perspective on this, having worked in reform for so long. What do you think about the latest changes? We're starting to see, you know, ungas is happening, and it seems to be an awakening to the need to change these laws.
It's been enormously exciting, Russ. I'm a state medical cannabis commissioner in Maryland, and was able to play a constructive role in creating the Maryland system. And we have right now 1,000 applications for licenses that we're evaluating. You know, we're going to have medical cannabis in Maryland. We're doing an interview over here. Could you hold on for just 1 minute, please? Thank you.
The changes.
Change is happening at a pace that is impossible for someone like me to contemplate. You know, I've been doing this for 40 years, and I can't keep up with it. Internationally, domestically, so much is happening in so many states. Even the federal government, the obstacles are breaking down. You know, with the appropriations bills that are blocking DEA from enforcing the law against medical cannabis, it's mind-boggling that Republican-controlled Congresses are voting this way. Mm. You know, even the DEA administration are now seriously thinking about rescheduling. We'll see what that means, but that they're saying this publicly. Again, is a sign. This is not like, a court has held a gun to their head and said, you have to stop screwing around with some litigant. It's the administration moving forward. So that this is an incredibly exciting time for young people, for people of any age who are interested in the liberty to use cannabis, the liberty to medicate themselves in an appropriate way, to see what the future is producing for us right now.
Hmm. Now, I'll get your perspective from both of you on this. I'll start with Eric. Pennsylvania looks like they're going to pass, the governor's going to sign their latest medical cannabis law. However, it follows in the footsteps of Minnesota and New York, no whole plant, non-smokable stuff. Is there a fear that as we're getting some of this, the reluctance of the drug warriors to give up on this drug war, that maybe some of it's predicated on their knowledge that, oh, now we can pharmaceuticalize it and keep control that way?
I think that the risk of pharmaceuticalization of the industry, in some sense, is real. I think that it's a concern that we need to keep in mind and to work against. I think that the reality is that the effectiveness and the value, the preferability of whole cannabis is going to assure that the market itself is going to keep it that way. Pennsylvania's law is simply not the end of the line in Pennsylvania for medical cannabis right now.
Is that
I largely agree, although I wouldn't necessarily say that pharmaceuticalization of cannabis is inherently a bad thing. I think the way that they're going about it is pretty terrible. But there is going to be a need for pharmaceuticalized cannabinoids. There are certain conditions that are just not going to be treatable by whole cannabis, and things like, if you're talking about alternatives to chemotherapy or treatments for neurodegenerative diseases, like these are going to have to be heavily, not necessarily synthesized, but it's going to need to be pharmaceuticalized for these to be really effective. But that's not what's happening in Pennsylvania and New York and Minnesota. What they're basically doing is medical marijuana under the guise of something that kind of sort of looks pharmaceutical. and that to me is really a sort of a stopgap measure for states that are a little too scared prepared to go all the way when it comes to medical marijuana. And so this is something that to them feels more like what they're used to when it comes to medicine. So I can understand from a legislator's standpoint why they're going this route. I just think it's, you know, I think when you're talking about making medical cannabis available to patients in need, you need to give them a wide spectrum of options, and taking away the option that the majority of patients use seems like a really bad idea. You know, all that said, I do think this is sort of a stopgap, because we're going to see, you know, in November likely, you know, four or five more states legalized for adult use. We're going to see more regular medical marijuana bills. And I think it's going to be really hard for states like New York and Minnesota and Pennsylvania, you know, 3-4 years down the road, to say, yeah, this is a really effective system, when you've got full legalization sweeping the nation and you've got, you know, real medical marijuana all around the country. And eventually it's going to have to shift to, you know, either real medical marijuana or just straight up legalization, which sort of resolves the issue as well. Then you have the whole range of products, from, you know, whole smoke products to compounded you know, formulas and oils and everything else, and that'll happen under legalization, and that will resolve it. And then the pharmaceutical companies can create these really targeted pharmaceutical drugs as well, just not in this sort of silly, you know, state sanctioned system of pseudo pharmaceuticalization.
Yes. Now, the most recent polls have shown, you know, overwhelming majority support for marijuana legalization, and especially medical marijuana legalization. Yep. But when you look at any other drug, it never breaks above 8 or 9%. So as we turn the page from cannabis legalization into other drug reforms, especially when these drugs may not be safer than alcohol, how do we tackle that?
That's a great question. I think that's really the million-dollar question for the movement now. You know, one thing that does concern me is if we're successful in legalizing cannabis without continuing the conversation around these other drugs, it might be a really long time before we're able to make significant progress when it comes to dealing with drugs that, you know, non-cannabis drugs that some folks would consider hard, you know, quote-unquote hard drugs. You know, people are a lot less sympathetic. There are way fewer users. And so while everybody knows a cannabis consumer, not everybody knows a heroin user. Not everybody knows a cocaine user. Or if they do, they probably don't know that person's a cocaine user. People are, you know, less likely to talk about it. You know, you don't have, you know, cocaine fest like you have hemp fest.
They're not wearing a cocaine t-shirt.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's just not that, you know, it's not that socially acceptable. So I worry that if we take marijuana out of the equation entirely, that we're leaving a fairly vulnerable population, people who may have real addiction issues, you know, in a really difficult position. So, you know, I think we need to start thinking about creative ways to manufacture, produce, and distribute so-called hard drugs, currently illegal non-cannabis drugs. I don't think that we're ever going to see, you know, cocaine dispensaries the way that we see marijuana dispensaries, but we might see, you know, something in between it being sold at you know, sort of a pharmacy and over the counter, something that's a little bit more controlled, maybe something that's prescription based. But certainly we need to take the manufacturing and distribution of these substances out of the hands of the black market and criminals, put them into something that's more heavily regulated, and make sure that we're putting real money into treatment for those who need it, so that those who do wind up having issues can get treatment without stigmatization and without being marginalized in society. And, you know, I don't know exactly how we do that. I don't think anybody knows exactly how we do that. It's why these conferences are so important, that we have folks coming together to talk about how we handle the post-prohibition era for non-cannabis.
What do you think about that, Eric?
I was struck by what I thought was this, you know, even with Chris's caveats, he, I think, puts his finger exactly on, you know, the heart of it, figuring out what are the systems of regulated control that we need to develop. I think there will be experimentation. He is correct about the hurdles of fewer users and the stigma, but as he was describing this, it was very important, I think, for our movement to recognize we've got to be talking about legalization of all drugs, that the public health need is so essential. Drug users' lives matter. Drug users' lives matter. And the way that you end up protecting them is through a system of legal access, with ending the stigma, ending the shame, you know, and, of course, ending the criminal supply. So teaching people, you know, what are the safer ways to use drugs, making them available. I, you know, my kind of model is, I mean, and, you know, to radical Russ, this may sound like a real off note, is what I call the stockbroker model, which is, you know, when you go to a stockbroker with your investment, they are barred from sort of making the most risky investment. They're supposed to begin by sort of saying, well, do you have a savings account? Do you own your home? Do you have a mortgage? You know, what are the most reasonable incremental steps for dealing with this rather than sort of saying, let us put us in this high, high risk thing? And so in my model for drug use, someone would say, well, it's the cocaine dispensary, or, you know, and it's the cocaine and drug dispensary. And somebody says, well, I'm here because I want to start using cocaine. And so the answer is, so what are your objectives? What do you want to get out of this cocaine use? So a guy says, well, I mean, I'm having trouble getting erections. Well, okay, maybe cocaine's not your first treatment. You know, maybe that's not the first drug to deal with that. You know,
have you tried whiskey?
You know, or maybe you're drinking too much whiskey.
That's right.
You know, or you know, so that the idea is, you know, that just as the stockbroker is governed by private regulation, there's a private association, there's a trade association with ethics, there's insurance liability, as well as sort of the government regulation, that we create an sort of integrated face of controls so that the counselor, it's really a counseling relationship. You want to go to someone who can counsel you in the use of these drugs in ways that make sense for your objectives. And to, if all the drugs are legal, then they sort of say, well, you know what? You know, maybe you want a different kind of stimulant. Maybe you don't need this at all. I mean, you know, to the extent that people, you want people to be as educated at the time they're actually sort of saying, okay, this is what I'm going to use because now I understand what it's going to do for me, then you've got a system that makes sense.
Thank you so much, you guys. And if you have any contact info or websites you want to tell people about?
My website's cjpf.org. That's for Criminal Justice Policy Foundation, where I've been the executive director for many years.
You got one?
Sure. You can check us out at forefrontventures.com. It's the number 4, and then frontventures.com. That's our website. And I'll put in the plug to everyone to go to schoolsnotprisons.com or ssdp.org and support the great work that Students Responsible Drug Policy is doing.
All right. And when they've turned out great people like you, Chris, and you know that they're going to turn out plenty more. Thanks, guys, for the interview, and have a great conference.
Russ, thank you. Thank you so much.